Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington, D.C.
The reaction at the moment is such that the voices of the youth was so loud that the leaders have been forced to listen.
The founder and chairperson of the Auma Obama Foundation, Sal Tiku, says to know what young Kenyans are thinking, you should listen to them.
We can no longer find justice because these people have stolen billions and billions of money. And the process has always been misused.
A Ugandan parliamentarian calls for a lifestyle audit for all public officials.
Personally, I am so happy with the elections process, especially as the first time in Mauritania. I mean, the election went well without any incidents to be reported, any demonstrations going in front of the municipality or of the police stations as we used to see in the past.
And Mauritania's Electoral Commission releases results of Saturday's presidential election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Kenya, the founder and chairperson of the Auma Obama Foundation, Sal Tiku, says to know what young people are thinking, you should listen to them. Dr. Auma Obama, who is also an author, sociologist, and sister to President Barack Obama, the 44th U.S. president, says Kenyan authorities lost legitimacy following the death of protesters. Her remarks come after the country's Gen Z youth rejected the finance bill, which will raise taxes. They are calling on the president to resign. For her thoughts on the current situation in Kenya, I reached Dr. Auma Obama in the capital, Nairobi, via video link.
The reaction at the moment is such that the voices of the youth was so loud that the leaders have been forced to listen. And the first we saw of that was when the finance bill was declared withdrawn, which, however, is not so easy. We all know that. And this is something that, again, the leaders must know. You cannot underestimate the youth. They are coming as a force that is very, very well informed, very focused. And we know that the bill can only be withdrawn once it goes back to Parliament and the National Assembly. It's proposed to the National Assembly to be withdrawn, and it also has a time limit. So even though the president stated that he had withdrawn it, and he conceded, and basically we could call it maybe an olive leaf, it's a long way from becoming a reality. And the young people are very aware of this, and they are going to hold him accountable for that.
What are your thoughts about the participation of the Gen Z in pressuring the government to abandon the finance bill of this year?
I think I would do them an injustice if I said they participated. They have led the movement. It is their movement. We are just flanking the movement. We're on the sides. We're peripheral. And we're actually irrelevant to them because we didn't do the right thing by them. They are on the streets now because they feel they have no future. Not that their futures are threatened. They feel they have no future. I mean, the young people are carrying, you know, banners saying the fear is gone. And another one saying we have nothing to lose. And they literally are saying that. And they're talking about the issues. And they're not just talking because they're angry and just letting their emotions run wild. They're focused. They're talking about what needs to happen, why they're involved, what is going wrong, what needs to change. They want their country back.
Dr. Auma, what about the demand for the resignation of the president? Do you think it's a realistic, objective demand from these young protesters that you said led this demonstration in view of the dictates of the Constitution?
In terms of whether it's realistic that they want the government to resign, the moment blood was shed, the moment a young person died, the moment a child died, because we have five-year-olds who have been killed, a young child, a baby, 5 years old, five bullets in the back. So this child was running away. The moment that happened, the government lost its legitimacy. Because you cannot point a gun at your own people. You cannot take the army that is there to protect your people, to fight your people. You cannot take the police that is supposed to protect people and property to turn around and fight its own people. A leader without a people is not a leader.
Do you see other African youth or the Gen Zs taking a cue from what is happening in Kenya? Because there have been a lot of unrest among a lot of youth in Africa.
From the podcast, the conversations that are happening online, there are a lot of young people joining from all over the continent, giving their views, thanking the Kenyans for showing them the way, thanking the Kenyans for having the courage to finally say no. And I think it will encourage them to start asking what is the situation that they have and what can they do to improve their futures. Because one of the things we do at our foundation, we say that you are your future. You determine your future. Participate, take responsibility, and be accountable. And that is what the young people in Kenya are doing. And I think this is not a threat. It's not violent. I keep saying the young people did not want to, were not even thinking about, you know, getting rid of government. All they were saying is they were opposing a bill. If the government had listened to them, because they don't want to govern, really. They want good governance, but they don't want to overthrow the government. But now what has happened is that they've realized that the government is not listening to them. So if you're not listening to the people who have put you in government, then they don't want you, and they have a right to get rid of you. They have a right to say, no, we don't want you because we will get the same old, and they're not willing. They want their country back. They do not want to be pushed away to go abroad to do the menial work. And the governments, if I talk of the whole continent, the governments need to listen.
Before you go, let me ask you if perhaps you have the crystal ball, what do you see happening in the next week or month to come based on the reaction of the youth about issues of governance in Kenya and perhaps Africa as a whole?
You know, if I could predict the future, I would be able to answer the question. For now, all I know is the young people are very angry. Blood was shed. Innocent young people, innocent children were killed. And the young people are not going to let that ride. They're not going to accept this. So accountability is now what is being demanded. And if this accountability does not happen, the young people will not stop. This is what I think. They have nothing to lose. Like I said, the fear is gone. They have nothing to lose.
Dr. Auma Obama is the founder and chairperson of the Auma Foundation. She spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. A Ugandan member of parliament from the National Resistance Movement, the ruling party, is calling for a lifestyle audit for all public officials as part of the effort to root out corruption. Yona Musungusi says corruption is a vampire that sucks the blood out of the country, which he adds must be fought. His remarks come after local media quoted President Yoweri Museveni as saying corrupt public officials are parasites that must be stamped out. He adds that the ruling party does not victimize anyone without proof. But critics say the president is also to blame since, they argue, Museveni has been in charge of the instruments of power to stamp out corruption for nearly four decades. Parliamentarian Yona Musungusi tells me that the president is not to blame. He also says corrupt public officials are vampires who must be investigated and arrested.
Africa at large, corruption, people have institutionalized it. It is in their blood DNA, an extent that they think they are so entitled to whatever they are doing. The economy of Africa, of Uganda, is no longer run by private investors. The private investors is now the government, because it is in the same government where touching in the treasury is just like you are touching in your own bank account. They have actually sucked the blood of a nation, Uganda, and they should not be called mafias, because when you call them mafias, they feel entitled and they feel like they are big, like these big names of our kings here. Let's call them vampires, such as that they fear the name.
Yona, the question is, you said they are vampires and they should be arrested, but shouldn't there be a process of investigation before an arrest and prosecution?
The process has been misused. We can no longer find justice because these people have stolen billions and billions of money. And the process has always been misused. We have several, every day we are forming an anti-corruption agency, IGG, anti-corruption court, state house anti-corruption what, but all this has not given us any leeway. People have kept on touching the government treasury. They have kept on dipping their fingers into the government treasury. I want everyone here in my country to make it very hard for these thieves. The public court has got to work because the leaders who should be helping us are not helping us. And what option are we left with?
The president said, quote, the thieves are parasites that must be stamped out, and the indisciplined are saboteurs of our fast development and must also be stopped. Critics of the government are saying the president has been in power for nearly 40 years, so he should also be blamed for the ongoing corruption that he supervises. What is your reaction to that?
It is not easy to supervise a thief. I don't think my president has been supervising over the thief. If he was supervising over them, he wouldn't have made such a statement. However, him, he may be good, but the people around him, whom we have even a bigger list than he has seen, we want him at an opportune time to listen to the voices, Vox Populi Voice Day. The voice of the people is the voice of God. Let him listen to the voices. The list is big. We have a bigger list, even touching in his inner circles, and we are not happy and we are not seated, some of us.
I know you are one of the champions calling for the fight to be won and all that, but do you think the institutions have been strengthened enough to fight corruption in Uganda?
The institutions, I can only give them 10%, because the syndicate of the racket of corruption of the corrupt officers in my home here is beyond them. The corruption here has been institutionalized, and it is high time we call for lifestyle audit. There is no way someone earning $1,000 equivalent of Uganda, $1,000. He has not had any business for all his lifestyle, but he owns mansions in Kampala here. He owns mansions in Dubai, and he has been a mayor public servant. We need to have a lifestyle audit to help this nation. Otherwise, I don't think we are safe with this borrowing that we are on now today.
What will Uganda gain with these lifestyle audits? And don't you think some of your ministers or colleagues in parliament might be affected as a result of that?
The fight against corruption is like a war. On a war, if it is your brother and is an enemy against your progress, you crush him. We have to agree as Ugandans, as Africans, that if this lifestyle audit comes, and it is my own brother, it is Minister so-and-so, it is someone in my own party, we should not tolerate. I've given you an example of this president in West Africa. We actually like him too much as Africans. He has given an example. He got his own Minister of Finance and subjected him to actually a mob justice, as I may say. So I think lifestyle audit can help us here, and we really need it.
Yona Musinguzi is a Ugandan member of parliament. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Voice of America.
Historically, politics have been viewed as a male-dominated area. It has been said that women's participation in politics is a good judgment of a country's attitude towards gender inclusivity. This week in Our Voices, we'll take a closer look at young African women leading politically. Join the conversation Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
Liberia's foreign minister says the country is a beacon of hope in West Africa, a region faced with what many analysts say contains democracies in decline. Sarah Baisolo Nyanti, who was in Washington, D.C. for meetings with top U.S. government officials and lawmakers, also says Liberia is ready for business. Part of her mission, she adds, is to assure the country's international partners and the business community about reforms by President Joseph Boakai to attract investment. I sat down for an exclusive interview with Madam Nyanti. Topics covered included the country's commitment to democratic values and transparency, her role as the foreign minister to improve Liberia's long-term political and economic outlooks, as well as plans to establish a war and economic crimes court to punish corruption and impunity following the civil wars. Here is the conclusion of the conversation. Is Liberia committed to the tenets of democracy and rule of law, the values of democracy, transparency? And when you engage, especially countries in West Africa undergoing quite a bit of challenge, including coups, what are the talks looking like as the Minister of Foreign Affairs?
Well, firstly, let me say, when you're talking about Liberia and democracy and whether or not we're committed to it, I will share with you something, a quiet moment with the president. And I wasn't the only one in the room. And he was talking about our National Elections Commission. And he said, I need to make sure the National Elections Commission is a commission for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's a commission that will abide by the rules and the tenets. And he cracked a joke and he asked me, does the so-and-so party have an office in every county? And that was his way of saying that at the end of the day, even the elections we've had in the past, have we upheld every aspect? You know, have we ensured that we were abiding by all of the rules? And he said to me, he intends to ensure that going forward, the National Elections Commission will be strengthened in a way where our elections will not be questionable. Our elections will be even better. We've had successful handover of power. Proud to say we have now two former presidents in the country. Mm-hmm. President Sirleaf is there. President Weah is there. Alongside President Boyka, and we're all living together peaceably. That's what he's looking forward to. And so we're committed to that as an administration, working under the leadership of President Boyka. We're committed to that. And I can assure you that after the six-year period that President Boyka is leading, you will see improvement in our democratic principles and tenets in terms of how we exemplify it, how we lead by example. But not only that, how our policies and our strategies and how our plans reflect that as well.
Do you think Liberia's democratic journey as you have it now can be a lesson in West Africa and by extension across Africa, especially in West Africa where you are having some of these military rules in some Francophone countries?
Yes, and to be honest with you, that's why Liberia has taken up the challenge of working with our sister countries to strengthen the Mana River Union. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs, particularly, I'm leading an effort for bringing together all of the foreign ministers, all of the finance ministers, and those who are responsible for the Mana River Union entities in their countries, the four Mana River Union countries, Cote d'Ivoire, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, looking at how we strengthen our collaboration for a stronger ECOWAS. And a stronger ECOWAS means a stronger AU. So Liberia is leading that effort. I'm glad to say that the four countries were all collaborating and standing together. And this is the way forward, collaboration and partnership. No one country can do it alone in the current context. Mm-hmm. And we need to be pulling others up where we can and others pulling us up where they can.
Mm. Liberia has been a significant player with ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States. However, critics say that ECOWAS, although it helped Liberia in the time of need, neighboring country Sierra Leone in time of need, ECOWAS has become dormant, a big dog with no bite. Your response to that?
My response to that is, well, I disagree. If ECOWAS was dormant, the role ECOWAS played for our peace and for advocacy for peace in the sub-region wouldn't be where it is today. It hasn't been perfect, but it's not dormant. ECOWAS can be stronger, and we have a responsibility to make ECOWAS stronger, all of us. And that's why we're pushing the Mana River Union, strengthening of the four countries, because you have countries that are, all of us are fragile in different senses. And so if we can work together to strengthen ourselves, we strengthen ECOWAS together, we'll be a stronger economic community. And we believe that we're really working hard on the issue of free trade, implementing the protocols of ECOWAS within the MRU. That's part of the agenda for the MRU meeting that's coming up. And this technical meeting will set the agenda for the Heads of State Summit later this year in Cote d'Ivoire. So we'll be hosting the ministers in Monrovia next month in July. And hopefully by, I think, October, the Heads of State will be meeting in Abidjan.
You are here in Washington. I understand you have a series of meetings. What is the major reason why you're here, and what do you expect to take back home?
So the major reason why I'm here is to do exactly what I'm doing with you now, to let the world know Liberia is ready for business. Mm-hmm. Liberia is ready to rebrand herself and portray the right image of Liberia. There's some people who think Liberia is still in war. So this interview helps us to get the message out that we're not in war. And actually, I can tell you, please, world, know that we have one of the top 10 best waters for surfing in the world, surfing waters. And so we're open for business, we're open for tourism, and we want to create an enabling environment for foreign direct investment. We want business people to know that they can do business in Liberia in a credible way. We want them to know that the framework that will allow them to have the right environment to prosper and to create jobs for the Liberian people, that's being created. And so the visit here is to speak to those on the Hill who have a role to play, all of the different stakeholders, including the media.
Sarah Baisolo Nyanti is Liberia's foreign minister. She spoke with me from here in Washington. In Mauritania, a prominent activist says he is pleased with the peaceful conduct of the just-ended presidential election. Sidi Ahmed also says if the results so far released by the Electoral Commission proceeds hold sway, it is not likely that the opposition will defeat incumbent President Mohamed Ould Ghazouani. His remarks come as the electoral body continues to release preliminary results of Saturday's presidential vote. So far, they show incumbent President Ghazouani has taken a lead with 49%, while his main opposition leader, Biram Da Abaid, was at 22.68%. About 2 million people registered to vote in Saturday's presidential election. For the latest development, I reached Sidi Ahmed in the Mauritanian capital, Nouakchott.
Personally, I am so happy with the election process, especially as the first time in Mauritania. I mean, the election went well without any incidents to be reported, any demonstrations going in front of the municipality or of the police stations as we used to see in the past. And everything went well and smoothly, as they say.
So the people comported themselves. It was peaceful. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was very peaceful, comported themselves, and they fought without the interference of anybody. Or, you know, as we all know, you know, Mauritania, in terms of between quotations, tribalism, you know, every leader has his own people to, he or she will effect upon them or tell them to vote to whom or how or where or even when. So everybody around Mauritania, leaders, every leader, they took care of their own people, and they provide for them all the means to go to provide for their votes and to vote from whomever they want to vote to.
Sidi, did the Electoral Commission say when it will release the final results and declare who the election winner is?
Until now, we haven't heard anything from them because even the results are still coming, you know, because of Mauritania is very fast and huge, and the internet coverage, even the network coverage in general is not that good. That's why sometimes they took time. But hopefully by this evening or tonight, they will declare the final results, and the current president will go for a second presidential term. So I think the celebration might be taking place this Wednesday of that mid of the week.
From what you have seen so far, who do you think will come out tops as the next president?
From the results until now, we have seen the current president is going to be the president of Mauritania for the next 5 years.
Ah, but the opposition people were thinking Mr. Abaid, the anti-slavery activist, they said because the opposition coalition backed him, he might defeat the incumbent president. Why do you think he can't do that?
It's not because he's not able to do that. Because, first of all, we have heard about some movement last night and a little bit of protest in the city of Ouagadougou. It's 560 kilometers from Nouakchott. Where the activist and the electoral Ibrahim Dahabed, he was running for he's running now for the election. His allies and his people who voted for him, they demonstrated because they were surprised at how come he did not win in the city where he was almost fully covering, and they were really surprised. And people will always be talking and thinking that they might have been some leakage of the votes or some corruption of the centers where people are voting from the parties.
Sidi Ahmed is a prominent activist. He spoke with me from the Mauritanian capital, Nouakchott. The newly formed People's Development Party, or PDP, plans to hold its convention to choose representatives in September. Rhodes Msonko, the acting spokesperson of the party, says at least 1,800 delegates will select representatives, including a presidential candidate, to lead the PDP to contest in Malawi's next year's general election. The announcement is generating mixed reaction in Malawi. This, as some analysts have welcomed the formation of the PDP, while others say the group will further erode the strength of the opposition in its bid to defeat incumbent President Lazarus Chakwera in the next year's vote. PDP spokesperson Rhodes Msonko tells me that Malawians will see a true democratic process in the party's coming convention.
Yeah, it's true. As the party's Politburo met just recently to discuss issues surrounding the possibility of the party holding a convention, you may wish to know that positions that are there now are being held in an interim capacity since the party was registered. So a decision was made to hold this convention between 13th and 14th September this year.
Rhodes, I understand you are expecting about 1,800 delegates to be part of this convention, but do you have that number of people who will attend the convention to choose leaders to represent the party ahead of the elections next year?
Very much so. We have a lot of members at present as a party because we have structures all over Malawi, those structures are made up of thousands and thousands of supporters. But we have this number of 1,800 because that's what our constitution stipulates. There are specific delegates that come from different levels. We talk about region, district, constituency, and areas.
Some Malawians I spoke with are expressing doubt about your electoral prospect. They say you are a breakaway party, newly formed from former President Mutharika's Democratic People's Party, or DPP, and that you are just dividing the front of the opposition to allow the ruling party to win. Your response to that?
Not at all. If that will happen, then it will just happen because politics is dynamic. I mean, we cannot tell what kind of results Malawi we can have in next year's elections. But look, PDP is a party in itself. We cannot talk about, of course, it's a fact that leaders, most of us that are leading the party now in an interim capacity are coming from the DPP. But there are a lot of members that not only come from the DPP. There are people who are in other political parties. Some do not belong to any political party before. They have actually made up the decision to be part of this political grouping. So to say that we are there just to divide the votes ahead of next year's elections, I don't think that is true.
Will your party, the newly formed PDP, consider joining an alliance with any political party before the election?
Well, the issue of alliances can only be discussed when time is right, because for us, that is premature to be talking about alliances. As you have rightly asked me, we are supposed to have our convention in September, and issues to do with alliances are supposed to be decided by, the National Governing Council, which will only be formed after the holding of this convention. So for now, that decision cannot be made by one person or people that are holding these positions in an interim capacity. But also, elections are next year. So I'm sure issues of alliances as at present, no political party is coming out clearly to talk about that. We are not exceptional. We are watching. We are monitoring. I'm sure if there will be that need to form an alliance, the leadership of the party will decide. But for now, we are a political party that is ready to participate in the elections as a party by itself.
What should the people of Malawi expect from the PDP as you go for your convention?
Well, they should expect a very democratic process, because PDP is a party that has demonstrated that it is doing things differently. In PDP, there is nothing like endorsing people in two positions. We allow people to democratically elect leaders of their choice, and that has even been said by our president. Honorable Dr. Gondwana Nankuma, on several occasions, when the party was being unveiled, when the party was being launched, he has said he's not going to endorse anyone. He's allowing members of the party to democratically elect leaders of their choice, and that's what Malawians should expect in as far as the PDP is concerned.
Rhodes Nsonko, a spokesperson of newly formed People's Development Party, or PDP, spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. The Central African Republic, or CAR, government has rejected calls from the opposition and civic society groups to postpone the country's first local elections in more than 35 years. Opponents of the poll say funds are not available and security remains fragile at best. But the CAR government and the United Nations assert the October elections will help restore democracy and peace to the troubled country. For VOA Moki, Edward Kenzaga reports from neighboring Cameroon.
The Central African Republic's opposition and civil society groups say a day hardly goes by in the country without reports of rebels either killing civilians or abducting people for ransom. Rebels and armed groups also loot for survival and create chaos in towns and villages across the borders in Cameroon, Sudan, South Sudan, and three other neighboring countries. Martin Zinkeli is the leader of the MLPC party, the Movement for the Liberation of the People of the CAR. He also served as the country's prime minister from 2001 to 2003. He says the violence makes it impossible for local elections to be held in October of this year, as the CAR government plans. Zigele says besides asking the government to bring back peace to the troubled state before any local elections, opposition and civil society want structural reforms so that the CAR has an independent elections management body. He says he is surprised that the CAR wants to organize local elections this year when the political, economic, and security situation that prevented elections in 2023 has not improved. Zigele spoke Thursday at a press conference in the CAR capital, Bangui, and said elections will be disrupted if the Central African State government fails to listen to opposition and civil society. Zigele did not say how his party or others would disrupt the polls. Opposition and civil society groups accused CAR President Faustin Archange Touadéra of preparing to rig the local elections in favor of his party, the United Hearts Movement, or MCU. They say by organizing an August 2023 referendum to scrap a two-term limit and extend the presidential mandate from 5 to 7 years, Touadéra indicated it wants to consolidate power. Touadéra, who was voted president of CAR in 2016, rejects the accusations and says he is responding civilians' call to lead the country out of sectarian violence. Maxime Balalou is the government spokesperson. He says the government of the CAR has taken enough security measures to stop what he calls selfish opposition and civil society groups that want to see the Central African nation in chaos by disrupting local elections. Balalou says it is an open secret that opposition and civil society groups calling for a boycott of polls are very unpopular and cannot democratically win local elections. Balalou spoke Thursday on state TV. He said MINUSCA, the UN peacekeeping mission in the country, is protecting civilians and reducing a humanitarian, human rights, and political crisis. This month, MINUSCA and the United Nations Development Programme signed a $1 million agreement to help civilians register and qualify to vote in the October local elections. The CAR says it needs $15 million to organize the elections, a date for which has not yet been made public. The government says elections, which have not taken place since 1988 because of political instability and armed conflict, will restore peace and democracy and reinstitute local governance and accountability. the CAR has been engulfed in violence and chaos since 2013, when predominantly Muslim Seleka rebels seized power and forced then-President Francois Bozize from office. A Christian-dominated militia called the Anti-Balaka fought back, and both groups were accused of killing civilians. The fighting has forced close to 1 million Central Africans to flee to neighboring countries. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Malawi's Constitutional Court has dismissed the case of two applicants who wanted the court to legalize same-sex relationships. State lawyers have welcomed the ruling, while lawyers for the applicants expressed disappointment. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the Malawian commercial capital, Blantyre.
The two applicants, Jan Willen Akista from the Netherlands and a Malawian transgender man, Jan Agonani, brought their case to the Constitutional Court for interpretation of Malawi's anti-homosexuality laws following their arrest in 2021. Akista is currently facing 9 charges of sexual abuse and sodomy, while Gunani is charged with unnatural offenses. They said Malawi's laws violate their fundamental rights, including a right to privacy and dignity. However, judges Joseph Chikona, Vikuchi Chima, and Chimbiziani Kacheche rejected their arguments in a ruling Friday. Judge Chikona said the two applicants failed to bring evidence on how the provisions in the country's laws were discriminatory against homosexuals. Chikona said Akista failed to prove that Malawi's laws violated his right to health.
The first applicant was asked in cross-examination if he had ever accessed a public hospital, and he replied that he had gone to Zomba Center Hospital after he was involved in a car accident. When he was asked about his experience there, specifically as to whether he was asked about his sexual orientation before he was assisted, he said he was not. He actually stated that he was medically assisted so well. The only complaint he had about the facility were spiders in the ward.
Chikona said the court also dismissed claims that Malawi police violated Gunani's right to privacy when they ordered him to undress to confirm his claims that he was a transgender.
We know that by Section 24 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Code that the police are empowered to search a suspect who is reasonably suspected of having committed a particular offence and who has been arrested. The caveat is that the search only extends as far as it is reasonably required for discovering a thing upon his person in connection to the offence suspected.
Minority rights activists and religious leaders attended the delivery of the judgment, which took over 6 hours. Rights activist Michael Gaiatsa of the Center for Human Rights and Rehabilitation said he was not happy with the ruling, but would comment more after going through the written judgment. Lawyer Bob Chinkango is among the defense lawyers.
Yeah, to be honest, in terms of the process, we are satisfied with it. Maybe the only thing we may not be agreeing with is the judgment itself, but it's too early to comment, as you will notice this is a 135-page document. We're just listening, we're not looking at it. So we'll be waiting for it to be given to us, analyze it, and then we'll be able to advise the client accordingly.
A spokesperson for Ministry of Justice, Frank Namangali, told reporters outside the court that the government is happy with the ruling. Same-sex marriages have been a controversial issue in Malawi. In July of last year, religious leaders led street protests across the country against the potential legalization of same-sex marriages in the country. Friday's judgment means homosexuality remains an offense in Malawi, punishable by a maximum prison sentence of 14 years. The Constitutional Court said Friday that the applicants are free to ask Parliament to amend the country's homosexuality laws if they are not satisfied with its judgment. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Blantyre.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs, and music from African Collection. But first, Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's Woman's Point of View with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Close observers of development in the Middle East, particularly the 9 months Israeli war in Gaza with its high casualty rate of civilians and the atrocities being also committed in the West Bank, occupied West Bank, we were caught off guard when it was announced last week that the International Criminal Court has issued an arrest warrant for former Defense Minister of Russia, who is now in another post, Shoigu, and another senior Russian official. In addition, it was announced that a Malian national whose case has been before the ICC is now being issued an arrest warrant. For those waiting to see what the ICC panel would say to the decision by the chief prosecutor to issue warrants against the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu, and the Defense Minister, as well as some senior officials in Gaza, it was just a surprise what has happened in these months. It turned out that once that statement was made about an arrest warrant against the Israeli Prime Minister, the British government had intervened with the ICC as a member of the Rome Treaty, saying that they were opposed to the decision to go for an arrest warrant against the Israelis. The reason is that the Israeli Prime Minister and his family are not subject to the jurisdiction of the ICC. Previously, President Biden and Secretary Blinken have also said that they do not see how Israel could be involved, but they could not approach the court because they are not a member of the ICC. The arguments made by the British has compelled the chief prosecutor to slow down the case against Netanyahu and his defense minister to give him time to respond to the British objection. In a sense, things have slowed down. But we all know that when you have such objection as that made by the British, it means it may take more time to get to that decision to hold the Prime Minister of Israel and the Defense Minister warrant of an arrest. In a sense, we are having a slowdown because the case against Shoigu really is not as serious as the genocide case against the Prime Minister of Israel. Well, this is things as they go. And we know the adage, justice denied, justice delayed is a justice denied. And this has always been the problem for those in the South. They wonder why there was so much double standard and hypocrisy when it comes to the difference between the global North and the global South. And the action of the chief prosecutor to indict an Israeli official was an indication there might be a shift. Because as you know, under the previous administration in the United States, the foreign minister had made a clear enunciation of policy. Pompeo said that the United States would not tolerate any attempt by the ICC to investigate his forces in Afghanistan or to mess with one of his allies in the Middle East, meaning Israel. So the hope about the removal of double standard had been a setback for a while. We all know who are those forces who work honestly behind the scenes to subvert the administration of global justice. And we can only hope that things will not go the way as many may hope or fear, and that the chief prosecutor may expedite the process so that the world will know precisely where the ICC stands in the case of genocide. At the minimum, then, one would wish that the media, particularly the Western media, would restrain itself and not make too much noises when the president of Russia travels or any other person with arrest warrants around the world calling for the arrest, as we saw recently when President Putin visited Vietnam. That is very important because the Global South is getting worried that the ICC arrest process is being used as a weapon against those that the West have problems with, but never to issue arrest warrants or any official in the Global North. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Stories untold full envelope. Can no feel like me lose control. I know be storyteller. What I love is to start in my cha-cha. Make a day go even so low. I know be fun, no feel let go. I know be vuvuzela. Me no like to they talk like never. I know they cross in my lane. I'm living like us at the bay. Yeah, or something you went there. I know they cross in my lane. I'm living like us at the bay. Yeah, or something you went there. Ah, something you went there. Or something you went there. Ah, something you went there. Or something you went there. Ah, something you went there. Or something you went there. Sometimes I feel like I'm supernatural, but I'm only a man. I'm only a man, I'm human. Most times I feel like I walk on water, but I'm only a man. I don't be Jesus, yeah, I don't be Jesus. Oh. I know they cross in my lane. I'm living like us at the bay, yeah, I suck in the window. I know they cross in my lane. I'm living like us at the bay. Us on the window, 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 us on the window. I know they cross in my lane. I'm living like us at the bay. I know they cross in my lane. I'm living like us at the bay. Us on the wind. But yeah.
Boy, normally. And nobody every time I get chance to become house, you understand? I decide say any opportunity where I get now, I go to use and they come house. They make sure I see my people serve the pillar.
We will want to tell you, we are double happy. Today God has made it possible. We are seeing you face to face. We are missing all the. We are amazed of what you are doing. What you are doing right now is touching all of us. Because you beautify our place. That means you give us shelter. You give us food. You are giving us a free movement. That's a wheelchair. Look, you've done more than enough. Yes. Okay. We want to sincerely say that. You will never be a race in our heart. Same with that.
Now we need one hour and five on the time call. You think so? So, then you need four. So, man. Oh, I'm past the four. Wait.
Look me, dad. As my dreadlocks are longer. I know say right now, now my time, I no go waste them, rada. I go use them, dada. I go use them, dada. In a sadness, in a bastard. How they sip, I'm judging. So if I do you wrong, I apologize.
For the people with the sympathize, I got go make them larger. Follow snakes and spiders. Make a wrong move, lose your life. Make it hard for your mother to sleep at night. Street no love you, rather. Some people they for mortuary. Some people they for hospital too. Count your blessing one by one. Sure bet, yeah. Time has come to lift our voices. Lift my voice in prayer.
The God of the orphan that has made way for you to visit me. I just buried my mother. I don't have anybody. I've been born with this sickness. I've been going through things. But all I want to say, may the good Lord bless you. Thank you very much, Bonaboy.
Nothing I can do to replace this, but you know, if there's anything I can do to make you feel a little better, I'm all for it. You know? So just promise me no cry again, because your cry didn't make me cry. Thank you, Mama.
I must tell you that your son, Barry, he does like an angel.
I told him I'm a giant, real African giant, self-confident, self-reliant. Told him I'm the master, they told me I wouldn't prosper. I tell them, say them be bastard, and then they joke you. Say me can't stop smoking you, happy then one don't see you. Me and they feel pain, but I move forward and I switch lanes. Because Odogu no be nickname, they say who be this person. I told them I'm big seven, put them for your body in a split second. Me and your song is a hit record. If I put you on, you a rich nigga. Yes, I told them I'm a born winner. I stay humble because I'm a born sinner. I told them that I was the realest. For some reason, they didn't believe it. So here we are. I told them from the start.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington.
Right from the very start, I told them.
Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer Justin Thwaite, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, a tree cannot eat its own fruit. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Hey, Kyle.